Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass is deep to his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done three things. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
All right, what's going on? Welcome to Cannell and Bell. We have a monster, monster show. Ton of stuff we got to get to. We have two Russells in the news. And I'm going to see how many times you screw them up. Because yeah. Your favorite is to cross over Russell Wilson and Russell Westbrook. Sure. So I have a feeling we're both going to do it at some point. Both of those guys are in the news for different reasons. The AAF has suspended operations. What does that mean? Are the Raiders in the market for a QB? And most importantly, to finish off the show, my favorite segment, we have a sneaker showdown.
Oh, that's going to be to end the show.
Oh, yeah, to end the show. Yeah, we can't start the show. We got to save that like a tease. We save that for the end of the show.
I want to ask you a quick question off the top.
What you got?
You talked about the kid, Trey Turner, like breaking his finger.
Yep.
When you're asked to bunt, right?
Yeah.
And something goes wrong with the bunt and you get hurt. Is there a resentment level for them, for whoever asked you to bunt?
Yes, there would be. My hunch is that Trey Turner was probably doing it on his own to try to get a base hit. I don't think it was because he's a speed demon. He already has four.
Right.
Actually, one of the cool things I got to do was color college baseball. I covered Trey Turner a bunch and the dude's like a speed demon. Like he can fly around the bases. So yeah, if it was a case though where you were sacrifice bunting.
Yes.
Then you would absolutely be livid.
They're
like,
suck.
Hey, what are you guys trying to do? And it's kind of like, you know, they ask like the ninth guy in the lineup to sack bunt, you know.
Right. You know, they're not asking Bryce Harper to get up there and bunt.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a question for you because before we get to any of the stuff we have to get to, I have a question for relationship advice for people listening. We give parenting advice. We give sports advice. We give all of it. In your marriage.
Yes.
Are you and your wife totally forthright with the money that you spend?
meaning like
if you go,
does she need to come tell me that she?
Yeah. No, or if she does, does she ever try to hide it from you?
No.
No?
No.
You guys have a healthier relationship than my wife, because my wife will go out and get something and I'll be like, hey, that looks like a new outfit. And she's like, oh, it's old. And I'm like, wait a second. And I'll like see the tags. I'm like, hold on a second. But I'll do the same thing, which is where I'm guilty, because we have our sneaker showdown. I've been amassing a nice little collection.
On the low?
On the low, right?
Dang.
So I keep them on like the back side of the closet, because she doesn't come into my closet. So
right.
I keep them on the back side. This morning, I was so mad at my daughter because I came downstairs and I was trying to just like get out of the house.
Sliding.
Just go through. Mm. And my daughter goes, Dad, you got new shoes.
Blowing
like,
your
those
spot.
Are cool. Yeah. So she totally busted me. And then my wife was like, oh, really? They're new. I was like, well, yeah,
so,
but I raised the money from selling other stuff on Poshmark.
So if you got a new pair of shoes, right? Is she out there right now going,
no, it's not
that bad. Is it tit for tat?
It's not that bad.
It's not, okay,
but the next time she buys something, she'll be like, well, you just bought new shoes. So that's how you go. So you have the better advice. Be open about what you're spending for sure. And don't waste all your money amassing a sneaker collection if you're in my case. All right. Russell Westbrook went off last night.
Yeah.
He had a historic 20-20-20 game. It's the most impressive triple-double you can get. 20 points, 20 rebounds, and 21 assists. Only second player ever to have done it since Wilt Chamberlain did it in 1968. He waved off a substitution by Billy Donovan with 104
Fantastic.
Left and a 16-point lead just so he could get the two more
rebounds. Did that bother you?
Here's what I want to get to.
All right. Now, be honest, because...
No, it would if there wasn't anything to do it for. But
when
you hear him after the game and you see the emotion, like it was a real raw emotion when he was talking about Nipsey Hussle, obviously the rapper and entrepreneur who was, you know, killed. It was a tragedy, an awful tragedy that happened in Compton. When you saw what it meant to Russell Westbrook, I was like, all right, if he wanted to do something to shout out his boy, kind of pay his respects, just do something special, then I'm totally okay with it. What I'm not super okay with, and I wonder what Adam Silver feels about, is that Russell, when he was asked about it after the game, he said all the stuff, this was for Nipsey, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Said, you know, it's a raw emotion. It meant a lot. And then he said, 20-20-20.
Right.
You know what it means.
Correct.
That number. And so, obviously, people were doing the speculation that it was a shout out to the Rolling 60s Crip gang that Nipsey was a part of, which I'm really curious to know if Adam Silver is nervous about that. And if I tell you what, to be honest with you, if I'm Russell Westbrook, I might be a little bit, like, I'm sure he wasn't thinking about it in the moment, but man, there's some crazy stuff that goes on with some of these gang wars. I don't know if I'd be shouting out any side.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that he was necessarily shouting out a side as much as paying respects to, like, a fallen philanthropist in the community and stuff like that, and a guy who meant a whole lot to that area. So I don't really know that he needs to have concern. Adam Silver, potentially, but I think it was benign enough to where if you weren't in the know,
yeah,
you it kind of went over your head. Would you have had a beef with it if it wasn't a tribute, if he was just chasing the 2020?
Yeah, because I don't like that type of thing in a game that doesn't matter. It just seems like it's too selfish. Now,
so
do you have a problem with it?
So I'm kind of like the Ricky
Devin
Davis
Booker
one.
When Devin Booker was trying to go for 60 in Utah,
yeah,
and Quinn Snyder was calling timeout and like fouling him, so he couldn't get it.
Right,
like good for Quinn Snyder for doing that.
See, yeah, I hear you. But 2020, it's really interesting because Russ is like this. He's not polarizing like
he kind of is,
but
though.
He is a little bit, right? And so you talk about records that recently you didn't think were going to be touched, right? You got Wilt scoring 100,
yeah.
You got average in a triple double. He's about to do that for like the third straight year,
yeah.
And now you're talking about a 2020 game. And he's done. He's got two of them. Like he's accomplished two of those feats. And so when I say that, I say I don't really have a problem with it. You know, there was still a minute and a half in the game. The game itself wasn't a blowout. It looked like a blowout at the end, but it was a pretty tightly contested game. The Lakers played hard. They played well. There was still enough time left on the clock where I don't really mind it. That is a very significant statistical like. Air that you're in now. That's not just a 50 point game I want to add to my resume. Like the 2020 game is something that you're not going to see again for decades potentially. So I'm okay with it.
Do you know why I don't have a problem with it? Because I like Russ.
Yeah.
I like the way he plays. And I have a hunch he wouldn't have done it if this wasn't the situation. You know what
right.
I mean? I don't think he would have said, no, I'm not coming out,
right.
Coach, if there wasn't something that he was paying to. I could be wrong. Maybe he would have done it. Maybe he does it again. But I don't know. I like the way
there was a good moment between him and Billy Donovan after he had waved him off. And the other reason I really like it is because, like, those aren't points. You're going for points. That's one thing.
Yeah.
You're going for hustle stats. I don't got no beef with that. Like, right. That's you.
And
that's
he didn't do anything
stat.
Like toss up and miss
no.
it on purpose.
He just went and got rebounds. But he had a good moment with Billy Donovan afterwards. The camera like panned to them over there on the bench because Billy Donovan probably didn't understand exactly what was happening,
right?
And only got waved off. And if you're the coach in that situation, you're like, oh, there's national TV. He just waved me off. What the
right?
The heck?
Show you up.
So they went over there and it was good. You could see Russ kind of explain it lightly, and then there was like a bro hug type of deal, and I think everything was cool. So you know, I liked it, and I really enjoyed Russ's post game when he was talking to Jason Terry, who did a really good job.
The players only stuff.
Yeah, Jet did a good job, but I liked that he kind of Russ is one of those guarded guys. Sometimes he'll give you his like when he's angry, but this was just a little glimpse into the softer side of Russ, like the personal side of Russ, and I appreciated it.
What's the hardest thing for him to get the 20 points? I think is the easiest. Is it
assists
or rebounds?
Assists.
It is. That's
I mean,
hard.
A rebounds is tough for a guard just because
right.
you're out there with 6'11s all over the court. Like that's really, really difficult. But he's so athletic and he's got such a high motor that I would imagine, you know, if you give him enough time, he could probably get 20 assists. You're not relying on someone else to finish. You know
right.
what I mean? Like that's a, you know, I don't know, 60.
Raja, is there someone on the bench who's like telling him how many like points, rebounds, assists that he has?
Yes.
Because like, how does he know what's happening?
Isn't
is there a guy who does it?
Yeah, a lot of arenas have it, like where you can see your totals. But there probably would be a guy behind the bench, like I don't know, a fifth assistant or your player development guy or someone that's sitting behind the bench that's like, hey, bro, you know, you're two away from like a 2020 game, you know?
Right.
Or you could be like Andre Kirilenko, who I played with, who had a running total of his stats in his head.
He was just keeping track of it all the time.
Andre Kirilenko would come out like in a timeout, no one thinking about the their personal stats,
right?
And he'd look over and he'd be like, I got two more assists than that. You're like, bro, how do you know you got seven assists?
He was upset at the scoreboard wrong.
And would lobby the score for like he would sit in the post game locker room and be like, I got to go talk to the score. I got two more assists than that. Like, I just, to each his own. Andre's
right?
my guy too.
Did he have incentives in his deal? Or
I love
something?
AK. I don't know. He had that mind where he knew exactly what was happening all the time and he had his stat line.
That's crazy. I mean, the way I was kind of like my dad would always be like, you know, I don't want you to know how many points you have, how many at bats you've got, how many touchdowns you've thrown, or how many yardage.
Right.
But when I got to Florida State, they had the scoreboard up there, and I was always kind of like, okay, it's getting close to 300, it's getting close to 400. Like, you kind of know what's going on. Now, you don't make a big deal out of it.
Right.
But everybody kind of knows where you are in that situation.
Human nature.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So good for Russell Westbrook for showing out. The Warriors, as I mentioned in our start of our show, I got the bet. You were wrong. I was right. They laid 8.5 and they smoked the Nuggets 116-102 to secure the 2-game lead in the West. I think it's kind of what we thought yesterday. Like, does it even matter where they play? They're obviously probably going to get home court throughout now. they're just so much better than everybody, which I think hurts the league. But I also think it shows that the Nuggets weren't the second best team truly in the West.
Yes. Here's why I was really hopeful that the Nuggets would come out and play well last night. And I didn't think they would win, but I thought they had to be competitive, and they weren't. Because here's what I fear. I don't know where Houston is in the standings right now, but if they're four, you're going to see probably the two best teams in the Western Conference in the semifinals. And I don't want to see that. I don't want to see Denver, because I do believe them to be better than almost everybody else in the West, except for Houston. I don't want to see Denver and Golden State just because Houston and Golden State had to play in the second round or whatever right. that is in the NBA. So I was hoping that the Nuggets would stand up, show some backbone, and say, hey, look, if we see you in the Western Conference Finals, this is going to be knockdown, drag out. And it's not. Okay, the Rockets are in third right now, so you probably get Nuggets, Rockets. So I'm fine with that. You know, Trailblazers shouldn't really be making noise. They lost Jusuf Nurkic. That's just what I was trying to guard against.
So how many games do we have left?
Five.
Four or five games left. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, because there is a pretty good race, you know, with the Trailblazers a half game back from the Rockets, the Rockets, you know, a game and a half back from the Nuggets. Like, is there any shakeup here as teams try to jockey for position? The Jazz look like it's going to be too much for them to overtake the Trailblazers. They're two behind them. But it should be an interesting finish. Again, I don't think really matters that much.
You know what I said about the Nuggets, and I don't mean to throw any shade at the Nuggets, because they've been a fantastic story this year. The reason I don't buy them in the playoffs is kind of the reason I didn't buy them in last night's game. They don't have a guy.
Yeah.
They got a lot of really good players, like really good players, but they don't have a dude. They have a guy, right? A guy. They don't have a dude.
Right.
In the playoffs, you got to have dudes. You got to have dudes that go get it.
What was the system you used in Cleveland when you rated players? It was a one player was a dude.
Yeah.
There was a franchise. You're going to build around that guy.
Twos were guys that were really, really, really good, and could like score a whole bunch of points.
Which Denver has. They just don't have a one.
They don't have a one. They don't have a one is a guy who carries you to a championship. There are only a handful of those. So this takes me to a bigger conversation about max money. There are only three guys I'm giving max money to, maybe four.
Right.
Like, I'm just not. I understand that that's not the way the world works.
Right.
But when you're talking about an era of player, a level of player that would deserve max money, there are only a few of those. Denver doesn't have any of them, in my opinion. Like, they don't have a guy that's just going to win the game.
So what do you think? 5-1 players across the league? You got LeBron, KD, you got Kawhi.
Yeah, Steph Curry.
Maybe more, probably 10?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when I really dig into it, they're probably 10. James Harden, guys that would, and you've seen them be able to do that. But not as many as wind up getting max deals. I don't begrudge anybody getting their max deal.
Which is what makes the Warriors so insane, because they have two ones in Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. And what would you put Klay Thompson? Is that two?
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Teams. Exactly.
We're talking about upper level.
And they got Boogie. What's Boogie?
Boogie would be a two.
Right. They're all stars. I mean, but
sure. Another top tier two guy. I mean, he's coming off of an injury when he's at his best. The only problem for Boogie is, when you're talking about a one, his team would have had to, that all-star level would have had to translate into wins, and it just didn't necessarily do that for Boogie.
Right. Denver's final five games are San Antonio, Portland at home, at Portland, at Utah, and then Minnesota. So it'll be interesting to see if they can hang on to that two spot.
I thought it was interesting. We probably got to go to break.
No, we got time.
You see Kevin Durant last night?
I did not.
You didn't see Kevin Durant? Durant got ejected again. So
he did. Yeah, so he's still hot.
He's one.
Maybe he was mad about the fine, which I was going to get to.
Maybe. Okay, that's a good segue.
Because him and
Zach Zorba, like Zach Zorba kicked him out of the game. Kevin Durant mouthed something at an official that was pretty bad. Like, he mouthed something at the official that was really, really bad. And, you know, I know we talk about it all the time.
What did it start with? An F or a B or both?
It was a BAMF.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. So it wasn't
a good one.
It wasn't a good one.
Not a good one.
It was interesting.
Because we talked about their reaction the other night when they were playing the Timberwolves, about the end of the game, how they felt like they were getting slighted. And we were right, because we thought Draymond it was the most egregious, like the thing that would bother the NBA the most.
Right.
And Draymond got a $35,000 fine for, quote, making statements on social media which impugned the integrity of NBA officiating.
Nah, I need my money back, son.
Really? You don't think he deserved it?
I need my money back. What? I put out four characters, four letters.
But everybody knew what it was. And
I referenced
the egregious thing you could do.
You take that to a court of law, you're going to be convicted. You take that to a jury, they're going to convict you.
No,
that's beyond a reasonable doubt.
He better have a son that's initials are MK or TD or some, like, is one of his.
Shout out to Timmy Duncan and Michael Klein, my agent. What up?
That could have been it.
I mean, but seriously.
Maybe he's a big fan of Michael Kors.
I want my money back on that one. The other ones, I understand.
Back, really.
I would take that to the player.
What?
Like, we would go to whoever represents the players in those type of matters. I would petition. I'd want to go in there and fight for my money back.
Because to Draymond's defense, he didn't say anything. Like, he didn't say anything. It was all because of these cryptic tweets. Steph Curry got the $25,000 for both his actions when he pointed at the ref after making the three. And
fair.
The public statements where he called him the MVP.
MVP.
That's not good. And then Kevin Durant was fined the least $15,000 fine for publicly criticizing officials.
Fair also.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm okay with that. I just don't know how
Draymond thing is, but I had a hunch that they
were right.
Most offended by that. But I kind of agree with you. Like, if I'm Draymond, I would say, hey, man, you can't prove that.
Yes,
there's no way you can do that. Even though it did come right after the game, probably the first thing he went in there did.
I thought it was a brilliant, like, way to navigate
the whole scenario. Like, and not get fined, to avoid a fine.
Correct.
Draymond also, his reputation probably isn't helping him.
At all.
You know, and that's one of the things that's not fair. So I think you should fight it too.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
Welcome back to Canal and Bell. We were talking about Russell Westbrook. Now we move on to Russell Wilson, because he is in the final deal, which is crazy when you think it has 1 year remaining on the current 4-year, $87.6 million deal that he signed after the first couple Super Bowls, one he won, one they lost, obviously. And I can't believe how much time has gone by. Like, I thought that was like a long term, like, lock him up. And then here we are just a year away. Well, Russell Westbrook says, hold on a second.
Wilson just did it.
I knew I was going to do it. Russell Wilson has said, all right, I don't want to go to free agency. You guys don't want me to go to free agency. I don't want to test the market. So let's get something done. But if we're going to get something done, it has to happen before April 15th, which not only is a tax day, but it's also the day that they report for their offseason training workouts, which every franchise quarterback would be a part of. Some players skip out on it, but they want their quarterbacks there. You do a lot of throwing. You do some timing, rhythm, and you're the leader of the team. They expect you to be there. So he says, nope, I want it done before April 15th. As reported by the Seattle Times, who had knowledge of the discussions. I think it's interesting. I have no problem when a player, I think, like, the way Antonio Brown went around his whole situation, Le'Veon Bell, just talking it out too publicly. I think this is the way you do it. You kind of leak it to a source that's credible. And I'm sure he's obviously doing it, but I have no problem with a player wanting more money and trying to tap into some leverage, which is, hey, I'm not going to show up. Now, does it change? Does he go all the way to training camp? Does this become one of those things like a Le'Veon Bell situation?
Right.
I don't know if that'll happen. But if I'm the Seahawks, I am absolutely saying, all right, let's talk. Let's get something done. Because you don't want to risk losing Russell Wilson. Because if he hits free agency, there'll be a dozen teams out there lining up saying, we'll pay him. So if I'm the Seahawks, I think it's the best for both sides of this party to get this done.
So at the end of the day, you imagine that 15th, April 15th deadline, they're going to feel the pressure to have to do something by then?
I don't think it'll happen by the 15th. I wish it would. Teams don't, in the NFL, old school, you know, old boys club, they don't like being told what to do.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Like, but I think it'll get done sooner rather than later. Like, I could see it happening before May 15th, because I think they'll want to see, all right, let's see what he does.
Right.
You know, like, let's see if he doesn't come in April 15th.
Well,
what does he do?
That's my thing. Like, if you're going to make a threat.
Right. Now, he could always say this report's inaccurate. No, so he kind of has that out because it was reported, with sources. He could come and he could just say, hey, that was erroneous. I'm going to be a Seahawk no matter what. I have a hunch that he does stay home. Like, he's earned it. He's at a point in his career, too, when he's played 7 years, he's 30. He doesn't have to be there every day. Like, he doesn't need to learn the offense. He doesn't need the reps. It's helpful. And if you're the, you know, like I was
saying, Tom Brady missed it last year, right?
Exactly. He sat at home. So it's not too crazy for a quarterback to miss it. But you kind of want him there. You know, like, so if he does stay home, it's not like, oh my gosh, what does this mean? It's just a subtle power move from Russell Wilson to say, let's get this done.
Right. You think he cares if he's the highest paid quarterback? You think he wants more than, what do you think he winds up? What do you think that deal should look like?
I think he's worth it because as we said yesterday, we were talking about Julio Jones. I think it's all timing and I think he's the best quarterback right now who is up for a new deal. So I think he should. Like, I think it's just the way things flow. So Matt Ryan is the highest paid, in the league with guaranteed dollars at signing with $94 million. Kirk Cousins is at 84. Aaron Rodgers, 79. Matthew. So I would put, man, 94 is a lot, but I think Russell Wilson is better than Matt Ryan.
I do. So
like,
too.
And I would, if I'm the Seahawks, I would say yes, he is better. Like if I was him, Coke and I were talking about this before. I think Kirk Cousins set a pretty good market and a good idea. I say, all right, Kirk Cousins got 3 years fully guaranteed at $84 million, so 28 a year. If I'm Russ, I'll say, give me 4 years fully guaranteed at 30 a year. So you're looking at 120. Let's make it even. 120, 4 years locked up. All guaranteed. Fully guaranteed. And I think he has the leverage to do that because he is proven. Because if he does hit the open market, he might actually get that.
And for NFL players to change the current structure of
They need guys like Russell Wilson.
They have to have quarterbacks do it.
Right. Because, I mean, as I said, no one liked the way Antonio Brown did it. Le'Veon Bell got his hand played by the Steelers because the Steelers were like, he's not going to sit out. And Le'Veon was like, yeah, I'll sit out. And they both looked at each other and nothing got done. You know, Le'Veon Bell missed out on $14.5 million. The Seahawks would never let Russell Wilson sit out a year. They just can't afford it.
They can't afford it. Is there any part of Russell Wilson? I was looking at his stats and last year, like, he's 20th. But they really handcuff him in Seattle. Last year, he was 20th in the league in pass attempts.
Right, but he was awesome in touchdown passes. So
correct.
They were more efficient. They didn't ask him. I actually think is better for Russell Wilson's long-term viability.
Sure.
But they're not asking him to throw for 5,000
quarterbacks
yards.
Might not think like that, though. So right, my question true. Is there any part of Russell Wilson that you think feels like he's handcuffed to some degree there in Seattle, or is he happy?
There is a rumor that's reported. I know Coke is going to get mad at me because he's not a huge fan. There is a rumor out there. Colin Cowherd started on FS1 that said he had heard that Russell Wilson wants out of Seattle, that he wants to try to go to New York because really? Sierra is a, you know, big star.
Oh yeah.
She would be more comfortable in New York. He wants a bigger market, wants a bigger exposure. I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's true, but this is a little bit like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that he did it at this time, that maybe he's saying, if you won't pay me, maybe there's, you know, trade talks. Cause I think, again, I think teams would line up to pay him. I also think teams would line up to trade for him as well.
Absolutely. And here's what
maybe two first-round picks.
You,
I would.
You took it a step further when you put a deadline on it.
Right.
You didn't come out like every other NFL player says, I want a new deal.
Yep.
And we need to get this done before the season starts.
Yep.
You put a April 15th, which is just a little extra step, a little extra, you know, tooth that you put into the demand there. It was interesting to me. If you want to go play in New York, fine. Don't be making career moves around.
Right. That's what I hope. I mean, but you know how it goes. Some guys, they get whipped and they're sitting there and they love having the wife and she's a big time star and she starts tugging on them saying, I want to be in New York. They might say, all right, I don't care. Let's go.
Listen, happy wife, happy life. I'm with that all the way.
But he's got a really good thing going.
You've got a career also.
Right.
And you're really good at your job. So don't let that affect your career. I'm not saying it is. I would hope that's not a.
It might be. I mean, it might be him saying, hey, I'm kind of buried in Seattle. Like, it's not a great market.
I want a bigger star. Yes.
If I could play in New York, you know, hey, call the Giants up. They're, you know, Eli's getting older. They're thinking about drafting a guy. You know, let's move the sixth pick and, you know, a couple of your next year's first round pick.
Right.
And we'll package that and give us Russell Wilson. Like, you never know what could happen.
How much time do you spend in the state that you play in? So, like, how much time do you think he spends in Seattle?
It depends.
Or is it just like, you know, the NBA guys, like Kawhi just bought the house in California and everybody thinks he's going to Cali, but he plays for Toronto. So is it the same in the NFL?
It depends on your stature. It used to always be, And this is what I hated, because I told you the story about the other day, is that I was in the car as soon as I was out of there. Like, sure. As soon as the season ended, I was off to Florida. And then it's, you know, like the latest date we'd have to be back. It used to be like March, you'd have to be back in the city kind of training.
Yeah.
And even still, I would go back and forth. Like weekends, I would go back to Florida, because you don't have to train like 4 days a week.
Right.
So I would go back to Florida every weekend. I think it bothered some of the teams that I played for. Like, why doesn't he live here year round?
Really?
Why doesn't he here, you know, at the facility, maybe putting in extra work? Yeah. I mean, like, it kind of speaks like, and I take some of the blame for it. I think I should have. But now the CBA, the new CBA says you can't go until April. Like, they bumped it back. They got more time off.
Right.
So it's not unusual for guys to go 3 months somewhere else. It is a little bit unusual for a quarterback. Like you said, Tom Brady. And there was a lot of speculation that that was kind of his middle finger to Bill Belichick for the trainer stuff, and there was friction in their relationship because mm-hmm. that was the first time he had done that. Mm-hmm. Most quarterbacks will be in that city from April, you know, through, and they might leave on weekends. They might keep someplace else. Sure. You know, usually like 2 weeks before training camp, they give you off, so guys will get out of there before they come back to the city. But it's pretty typical where guys will be in the, you know, they'll reside in the city they play in.
Seattle.
Dennis Green, remember Denny Green
from
the Vikings? He was one of the epic guys who was like, I don't care when I see you. Just be ready to go at training camp.
Right.
And if you're not in shape, we'll cut you. You know, and it was great, like, because nobody wanted to live in Minnesota January, February, March, April. It doesn't get, you know, nice there until June.
Right.
So he was like, I don't care. Just go, show up there. Green Bay, I think, had a little bit of a similar policy. Like, hey, it's kind of cold here. You know, you guys can train somewhere warm, come back, you know, as long as you're here for the OTAs and the training camp. So it kind of varies on teams.
Let me ask you a question. If you are a team looking for a quarterback in this year's draft, mm-hmm. at the top of the draft, are you calling Seattle? Are you?
Yeah, if I'm the Giants, who else? Oh, the Arizona Cardinals. If I'm the Raiders, absolutely.
Right, just testing the water.
Yeah, like, and the Raiders are a good one because they have Derek Carr, who's pretty good, but he's not Russell Wilson. And then if I'm John,
and multiple first round picks,
they've proven to be players. Like, they're saying, hey, we're going to go get Antonio Brown. They've got three first round picks. They could package two of them.
Yeah,
and say, hey, you know, maybe we'll maybe trade Derek Carr and something else. That could be really interesting.
Yeah, I was,
but. Does that do anything for Russell Wilson, who supposedly wants to go to New York?
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's not, I don't think it's a better situation. It's definitely not a stable franchise. Now, maybe he wants to go to Vegas. There's a lot of stuff that I think we're speculating on that we don't know, but I think it is interesting that you've got this kind of situation developing in Seattle. Let's see how it unfolds. Speaking of the Raiders, they held workouts for both Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins, yesterday and Monday for both of them. I think it's kind of a smokescreen. I think, every team, probably the top five teams that are in the market for a quarterback, are going to bring these guys in.
Yeah.
They're going to work them out, and they're going to do their due diligence. And it's also for – it might be real, but I think it's probably a smokescreen just saying, hey, we are interested, but, you know, if you want to call us, we might do something. I don't think they take either one of them. That's my hunch. I just don't think so. I would love it. I would love for them to I don't think they take Dwayne Haskins for sure. I think this is all about Kyler Murray, but it goes to the smokescreen. They're going to bring them both in. Hey, we're considering them both. You know, so they want to just look at them both. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked if they made the move for Kyler Murray. I would be floored if they made the move for Dwayne Haskins.
There are some gamesmanship there for sure. And I could see Kyler more than I could see Dwayne also. You know who this is a terrible look for?
Who? Derek Carr?
Derek Carr. This is tough.
And it's tough on guys like Derek Carr, on guys like Josh Rosen, when you're seeing all the speculation and all the supposed trade rumors and would you move on from this guy? I do think it's impossible terrible. To insulate yourself from this mentally. So it's going to affect your confidence. It's going to affect your relationship with Mike Mayock and John Gruden because you're like, man, you guys really thinking about it?
There is nothing that they can say to Derek Carr right now that's going to pacify this. Derek Carr will forever believe he's not their guy. Who didn't work him out?
Right, the teams that haven't worked those two out. Right, a lot. Like,
right?
Chiefs, they didn't work him out. They got Patrick Mahomes.
Patriots, nope.
Exactly.
Seattle, nope.
Any team who likes their quarterback, they ain't working him out.
Working him out.
I do think they probably have come in and said, this is for show. We're just doing our due diligence. You're our guy. But I do think there's some damage done to the relationship.
Why do
it? And maybe when it goes past the draft, then you can breathe a sigh of relief, as obviously I think Derek Carr would, and Gruden and Mayock will probably say, see, I told you so.
Okay.
For show. But right now, this second, I think it hurts his feelings a little bit.
Absolutely.
And I would be too. I would be in the same boat for sure. All right, welcome back to Kennell and Bell. So there was some unfortunate news that kind of developed in the last 24 to 48 hours. As the AAF, the new football league, obviously was started by Bill Polian and Charlie Ebersole, has ran into some speed bumps, to say the least. And it stinks. Like, I was a fan of this league as a former player. I think it provided great opportunity for guys. Like, at the end of my career, I would have done it. Sure. I would have said, hey, sign me up. I'll play. I don't care what money. I just want to extend my career, mm-hmm. put some stuff on tape. I did it in arena ball. Like, I would have done it for this league too. So it's really an unfortunate circumstance, the way it unfolded. I think what happened is this, the league owner, Tom Dundon, who came in and kind of rescued the league with this $250 million commitment that he had, when they couldn't make payroll. I think he played him. Like, you watch Billions, right?
Yep.
I think this was a Bobby Axelrod move. Like, I think he came in and he saw something vulnerable and he said, all right, I'm going to come in and quote, save it. But there's a lot of speculation going around that he wanted their gambling app. And now, like, that the league was kind of struggling. He was like, hold on a second. I'm not going to keep shelling out money. It's not working. I'm going to shut it down and I'm going to take the app with
me. Got the intellectual property.
It sounds like pretty nasty. And the dude's pretty cutthroat. I mean, he's obviously a successful businessman, but I think it's pretty
The app already exists, so it's not intellectual anymore. Like, this is a real app. Like, this is just like,
I assume. I mean, but it's, you know, and then Bill Polian, who I worked with him for a while in the broadcasting business. I think this is as mad as you'll see a quote from Bill Polian. Like, to me, I think he's seething, and I think this is him, like, being as controlled as he can. I am extremely disappointed to learn Tom Dundon, that's the hedge fund guy who owns the Carolina Hurricanes, has decided to suspend all football operations of the AAF. When Mr. Dundon took over, it was the belief of my co-founder, Charlie Ebersole, and myself that we would finish the season, pay our creditors, and make the necessary adjustments to move forward in a manner that would make economic sense for all. The momentum generated by our players, coaches, and football staff had us well positioned for future success. Regrettably, we will not have that opportunity. I think they got screwed over by Tom Dundon.
Yeah, they got
played. That's the bottom line.
They got played.
And it stinks for the players that are kind of the victims in this situation, because they're the ones putting their bodies out in the line. They're the ones financially that needed it the most out of anybody we're talking here. Yeah. You know, when they signed, you know, 3-year deals for $70,000, $80,000, and $90,000, that's a lot of money for young guys who are struggling just to make it in football. So it's just, that's the biggest bummer to me.
So when I came out of school, I was drafted in the CBA. I didn't get drafted in the NBA, and I went to Yakima, Washington. I played 1 year there, not nearly like $30,000 a year. I don't even know what I made. It was like week to week you were making money. And so I did need that money. And you know, it was providing a platform for me to potentially play in the NBA. I had to do it again for a second year. Isaiah Thomas bought the league and folded it while we were all living where we were living. So there's no more payroll. There's no more plane tickets to get you home. I'm in Yakima, Washington. Now, lucky enough for me, I had a family that could afford to bring me home. I had friends that were stuck in Yakima, Washington.
Yeah.
League folded. You're across the country up in a truck stop in Union Gap, Washington, and you can't get home. So, you know, I feel for some of these guys, not just because their professional dreams may have detoured and you don't know where you're going now, but, you know, for real life circumstances, like the Best Western wanted their money.
Yeah.
It's ruthless. You know, we were like, we don't pay that. What do you want me to tell you? We're kicked out. We can't get home.
Right. It's, ruthless. The players, from the AAF are now being forced to pay for their own travel back to their respective home cities.
It's tough. Which,
you know, they're going to struggle with that. There's going to be some guys that are buying, they can't even buy gas, you know?
Seriously.
The 3-year guarantee or non-guaranteed contracts worth 70 in the first year. So that's what they're making, 70 grand, mm-hmm. which, you know, it's a pretty good living, but some of these guys are living paycheck to paycheck. They've never made a dime and they're trying to figure out, how do I make this money last? You know, what's crazy is that the words of wisdom came from Johnny Manziel, who tweeted out yesterday. He said, if you're an AAF player, obviously he just joined the league like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and the league does dissolve, the last check you got will be the last one you get. No lawsuit or anything else will get you your bread. Save your money, keep your head up. It's the only choice at this point unless something drastic happens. Just the reality of this unfortunate situation. Great concept, great football on the field, and fun for fans to watch. Just not enough money to go around, which has been the problem with other leagues for a long time. Which does, like, what's crazy about this is we've seen this story before. As we've seen NFL Europe, we saw the UFL. I don't know if you remember that. It was pretty vague league. It lasted for a couple years. But there were some pretty big name coaches in that one, folded after a couple years, couldn't survive. So we've seen three examples at minimum. There's been others. Three examples of football leagues folding, and we have two more launching in a year. The XFL, and then Don Yee, who's Tom Brady's agent, is starting another league that's going to allow guys to go straight from high school to play.
Wow.
I mean, it's insane. Yeah. When you think about it. I don't know why.
The USFL
yep.
was the only one that ever really made the NFL nervous,
and you know
right?
why?
They had stars.
Well, they could buy them.
And they had money.
Right. Because they were buying guys like John Elway and Doug Flutie.
Sure.
And, you know,
Eric Dickerson go there.
I don't know. Maybe not Eric Dickerson. It was kind of before my time, yeah. but they were paying dudes. Jim Kelly, I think, played. Like, it was the big, see, and that's what, Now, you know, if you wanted to really do it right, you'd have to have a lot more than $250 million. And you'd have to be able to sign not only maybe lure away a Trevor Lawrence and Tua Tagovailoa.
That's what you...
Maybe you go to Patrick Mahomes. Who, yeah. You know, and say, hey, forget the Chiefs. We'll give you money now and we'll give you $200 million. Come play with us.
Right.
You need a face of the league and you don't just need one. Then you've got to surround him with players. It's just really financially, it's tough.
What it boils down to, I mean, it sounds really simplistic. You can't go up against an NFL, an MLB, an NBA without stupid bread. You can't limp in there and hope that something's going to work out and you're going to grab a foothold and we'll see what it looks like after 6 months. You have to be able to just bleed and hemorrhage money and throw it all around
right. To
get some of those guys to come over, and then maybe you got something cooking.
Yep. I wonder if the XFL has called them up and said, hey, maybe we do something together. Like, because there was been a lot of speculation that they would merge anyway, and I'd be curious to see what happens with them. All right, let's move on to Gino Auriemma, the head coach of the women's UConn basketball program, the Dynasty. Obviously, they're in another Final Four, which is no shock to anybody. But he had some really interesting comments on coaching today's player, which I think is as challenging as it's ever been.
Sure.
And I think he's spot on. He said, because there's a couple of University of North Carolina's women's program is under investigation.
Whole staff has been suspended.
Georgia Tech has been fired. There's a lot of accusations from players that they're being verbally abused and, you know, in some cases physically abused, I believe. But his quote, the majority of coaches in America are afraid of their players. The NCAA, the athletic directors, and society has made them afraid of their own players. Every article you read, this guy's a bully. This woman's a bully. This guy went over the line. This one was inappropriate. Yet the players get off scot-free and everything. They can do whatever they want. They don't like something you say to them, they transfer. Coaches, they have to coach with one hand behind their back. Why? Because some people have abused the role of coach. He's spot on because he speaks a lot of truth to coaches being scared. But I love that he backed it up because he said, why? Because some people have abused the role of a coach. Because
right.
There are some instances where it has been egregious.
Yeah.
But now, if you coach up a kid too hard, male or female, they're going to go complain. And that presents a problem because it's a coaching style that has worked for a lot of people, that does work. I was chewed out. I never had a problem with it. I know some people don't like it, but you know when you're being recruited what type of coach you're going to play for, like just watch their games on TV.
Sure.
If you don't like it, then don't go there.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before, picking who you play for, whether it be in college or high school or wherever you have the opportunity to pick, you know, you do have to make sure that you can work with that person, that their style fits your style. That's a big thing. There are a lot of guys that go to schools, girls that go to schools, and they realize that their personality doesn't mesh with the head coach. You've been recruited by an assistant. You know what I mean? But the assistant isn't the one yelling at you every day in practice. So right. You have to make sure that you work with that head guy. Yeah, some people have abused the position.
But generally, agree, though, that it's harder than ever?
Absolutely.
I think it's virtually impossible to coach hard.
It is. And my style is when I coach, and I coach youth, I'm
loud.
I am loud.
Yep.
I am tough. It's the way I was brought up. It's the way I know how to do it. I think, you know what word I really don't love? And I, at the risk of sounding like really intense, I don't like the bully word. I think it gets used way too much now.
Mm-hmm.
I do. There are bullies.
Yeah,
don't get me
sure.
wrong. And some of those cases are tragic and there's no room for that. But not everyone who constructively criticizes or is tough on someone and holds them to a standard and holds them accountable is a bully. That's not bullying. Like, I want to know who's making the call as to what is over the top in terms of, let's use Izzo in a guy's face. The other week, like, did any of his players around him seem to really have an issue with that?
Not one.
No. So who's making the call that that's over the top and it's too much? You have to base it on, like, I'm tough on my kids. Right? But, you know, if you love them up and you have good relationships with them and you're personal with them and you're asking about them and you care about them and they know that, most of them are okay when you're tough on them and you hold them accountable and you set rules and you expect them to live up to those. Do you know
right.
what I mean? And that's kids, what you're judging that off of.
I think most kids want to get coached hard. They want to be pushed. They want, remember we were talking to Bill Cowher and he was saying
the good ones do. There are some that have no interest in it.
Right.
I see it.
And it's not cut out for them, but that's what life is like. If you can't handle it or
you're not built for
the work,
you're not built.
Then don't play.
Absolutely.
I think where it comes from, the criticism is, a lot of times it's the media, which leans a certain way,
yeah.
and they're trying to move society a certain way, which is more gentle, which is more respectful, and not as firm as everything else. And I think it's from people who have never played. You know, like those two things, I think, are the problem.
The voice of the person that never played is way more prevalent now. Like you have more access to that voice, right?
And they're most of the people in the media.
Yeah, and it's that has not helped. And who's to say, this is just society, who is to say that the pacification of all these kids, because it's happening.
Absolutely it is.
That's better for us.
It's not.
Who's to say? We haven't seen those kids grow up and be adults yet and have to lead our country.
Right.
We haven't.
No.
What if they turn out to be complete pushovers and we're sitting here in 15 years like, oh my God, we pacified a whole generation of kids. It was the worst thing we could ever do.
They are. It's already happening. Like, kids are struggling to get jobs. They're struggling to keep jobs because at some point you're going to have a boss who's going to say, you know what? You're not producing, and he might not chew you out. He's just going to fire you.
Yeah.
I'd rather be chewed out every single time than be benched, you know, or get fired or get cut. I'd rather have a coach coach me up like that.
You know, this is specifically to my boys, not the ones I coach on my travel teams or the high school teams. These are my children. I take them in the backyard. We work out. There is a level that I expect you to be working at. Now, you don't have to make every shot. That doesn't happen all the time. No one does that. You don't have to be perfect on anything you do. But you must be working your tail off. You must be giving me 100%. All right? And you have to be here and engaged. If they don't, they get it. And they really get it.
Yep.
And my point to them is, I'm your dad. I love you. Right? And I will do everything to prepare you for what this real life is going to look like. And when you get out in the world, that guy who's talking to you and who's expecting from you is not your dad. And he's not going to tell you he loves you. So if you get used to getting it from me and understanding that you have to work at a certain pace and give forth a certain effort to receive the benefit or the reward, then when you go out in the world, you'll be fine. But that's my job. And I'm going to hold every other kid, because I hold him to that standard. When I get the rest of them, I'm going to hold them to that standard too.
So if any parent comes to you and complains,
my son gets it worse than anybody.
Exactly. That's the best way to do it out there. I, on the other hand, I had my first coaching foray into basketball with my daughter's hoop team.
Yeah.
I had my 10 and 11 year old on my team. I was the nice guy. I went too far of let's have fun. Let's just enjoy it. And I wasn't hard on them. You know what they did? They walked all over.
Yeah, yeah.
They were talking while I was talking.
Right.
They would talk back to me. I don't want to come out of the game. Next season, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to the Rajah Bell School of Coaching. They're going to be like, what hit us? So, I'm coming and I'm bringing it. I'm bringing the heat.
Let me tell those. So yesterday, fourth grade practice. Okay. I have a fourth grader too. I have two new kids in my practice. Both of them are big guys. All of my kids are conditioned to know you go get your water, you bring your butt back, you're standing there, we're ready to go. Don't be bouncing the ball because I'm about to start talking and I can't talk while you're talking or bouncing the ball. So, these two kids sit up in the stands with their parents. Don't come back. Now, I realize really quickly, they don't know. Like, they haven't been around. So I yell at both of them. Yo, Carter, hey, get over here. Get your butts back on the line. And their moms are like, everybody else is standing over there, right? And we're going to get back to work. Their moms didn't have a problem with it. They just weren't used to it, right?
Right.
Next water break happened. Guess where those kids were standing?
Oh, right, ready to go.
Right, ready to go. No problems. Nobody had any beef, and our practice continued to roll. If that mom doesn't support that, if she's not with that, then everything goes to – I basically have to tell that kid he can't come back because it starts to wear away at the fabric of what you're doing as a coach. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So those kids are fine. If you give them rules and you hold them accountable and you're willing to hold everyone accountable, there's no problem. It's transparency. Here you go.
What's your sixth graders rank in the country? What do you guys, like third or fourth?
They were fourth in the country. We lost in the finals up at Spooky, so I don't know if they dropped this.
You guys are top 10 in the country.
Yeah, we got some really good players, man, and they've come a long way since.
You know what my girls' record was? 0-8. So I think your coach's style works better. We don't need to see anything play out in the future. We saw results right there. All right. All right, welcome back, Kinnell and Bell. So Bryce Harper was in D.C. last night facing his old team, and there was no love lost. The fans were booing him throughout.
Healthy boo.
A healthy boo. Like, that was one of the most – that was one of the loudest boos you'll ever hear. Struck out in his first at-bat.
Mm-hmm.
Nationals Twitter account comes out and says, yo, home, smell you later.
Take that.
And we were talking
about Scherzer's dealing.
Yes, Scherzer's dealing. It's two strikeouts to start the game. Would you think that he found out about it? And then later in the game was in hand. He goes yard, and it's great hit, but wait till you see the bat flip.
Because
I thought it was one of the most egregious, offensive, disrespectful bat flips that seen in the game. Watches it, pips it out, then flips it.
Grabs the barrel.
Oh, yeah. Like, this was premeditated bat flip.
Yes.
Premeditated bat flip that Bryce Harper did. This is offensive. If I'm pitching for the Nationals tonight, he's catching one right in the ribs.
I was going to ask you, will they do that? I mean, that was a...
Here's why. I think they play actually this afternoon.
Most bat flips come from the handle.
Oh.
He grabbed the barrel and whipped that thing.
This was...
The only thing better would have been Pedro Serrano around the...
yes.
Around the take that.
He would have... He could. This was premeditated bat flip.
This was not...
Because I don't have a problem with it if it's a game winner. And it's emotional and you're just... Wow. You just lose your mind.
Yeah.
That was premeditated.
You don't think that was emotional for him?
It was, but it wasn't as emotional as it would have been for a game winner.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, right. Spur of the moment. I think what will be real interesting, I think this is great for baseball, actually. Like, I love that he did it, but I think he's got to be prepared to wear one.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if it'll happen or not. If it does.
Does he fight?
Oh, yeah. They'll do the baseball thing where they clear benches and they call come shove.
Will he fight?
Yeah. I think he'll
run out there. You think he'll throw a punch or it'll all be for show?
It depends on who the pitcher is.
Right.
And I think it'll tell you a lot because there's a lot of different stories that come out of their clubhouse from when he was in the Nationals.
Sure.
I thought there was dysfunction. David Sampson was like, the players liked him more than people thought.
Uh-huh.
If they go after him and there is a brawl and he's ticked, I think it'll tell you all you need to know. If they don't and they let it lie, then I think, all right, you might be onto something. Like, maybe
might,
it wasn't that bad.
I
know, right? That's why I think it's good for baseball.
Yeah.
That line there. Channing Frye has recently retired, from the NBA. He said, when he retires, I'm rich, I'm a champion, I'm 35, I'm retiring, and I'm living a great life. So if you think I suck, I'll see you at LA Fitness in a year, mother bleepers.
Boom.
That's a great line.
Boom.
That's one of my all-time favorite, like, retirement lines that
Boom.
I think I've ever heard.
That's fantastic.
I love it. And you, like, here's the thing. I don't know if you win anything in that one.
No.
Because it's great if you go out there and ball, but what happens if the odd chance that you get dunked on or you get to look bad, somebody's going to have it on video.
Nah. Here's the deal. There are a lot of guys that think that they could play against an NBA player and do that.
Right.
Channing Frye, if he is still in shape at 6'11 or 7 feet, it ain't happening.
No one.
You get me right now. I come into a gym. I don't look, a guy got me in Long Island. I was at LA Fitness playing with my son Dia. We jumped into a men's game. I was terrible.
Right.
Dia was working, but there was a kid fresh out of Baruch College was giving me straight buckets.
Really?
And I'm 42 years old and I can't move.
Right.
And a healthy NBA player, just, you're not serving him at LA Fitness. Believe that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really. You know, it's funny that he called it LA Fitness because you were talking about player in there. I used to work out at LA Fitness here in Fort Lauderdale, where we are locally. Scottie Pippen used to come run a little bit.
Yeah.
But he was like, he would always play it cool.
Sure.
Like, I'm just going to run. I'm kind of shoot out some threes.
That's what you do.
And I think there's always that hero. There's always that dude that wants to be the guy that did something, either blocked you
right.
or dunked on you. It's probably the thing that's probably more concerning if you're a player is getting blocked because that's where you get hurt. Like,
yeah.
You know, if the kid's going to try to dunk on you, just move out of the way. Be like, hey, well, you do whatever you want. I'm not going to try to block your shot.
Right.
But if guys, you know, trying to block
it's the try hard guy. Because what that leads to is, hey, man, damn, you elbowed me in the face. And you're like, brother, you've been fouling me for the last 7 minutes. Like, I didn't try to elbow you. Your face is in the wrong place. And now it's a physical altercation. So that's what, you run the risk of that if you're in there trying to prove something is Channing. But trust me, if you're out there and you think you're going to run up on Channing and LA Fitness and serve him, you're mistaken.
All right, let's set the stage. Sneaker showdown. Here we go. Wednesday. What do you got?
So what I have is a original Kobe 5, 2010, I believe, made
by Brian. Out of my shot.
I'm in your shot. Where's my sweet spot? Right there. Yes. All right. You got the what?
I got the Travis Scott edition, the Cactus Jack.
Those are dope.
These are pretty dope.
Let me make.
Hard to find.
Those might be impossible to find. You can't find. These are original. These were not re-released. This is an original shoe. So quick backstory.
See, this, Nike, this kills me.
Nike never allowed an ID for a signature shoe until 2000, until the Kobe 4. It was the year before this. Only 24 pairs every day were allowed to be ID'd. I could never get one. I tried over and over. The next year, they allowed you to ID his Kobe 5. Brian Zettler, our trainer for the Jazz, did these for me. These were game worn, one game with the Jazz. Kobe
you always
4.
Come in with Kobe a game 5s. Worn. Like, that's the hammer. You're
gonna be hard to beat that.
Those are fat.
Those are
pretty
those
fire.
Are nice.
I took off the tag. I should have left it off. They're kind of
suede?
I too. Yeah. These are tight. Let us know who you may win. Like better.